couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today, death comes to the box office with Edge of Tomorrow and The Fault in Our Stars, I guess kind of with Obvious Child and The Sacrament and Anna. The only movie that really doesn't have death as a partially, at least minor central theme is Burt's Buzz, which is about Burt's Bees, which is a lip balm. The bees don't even die because they make the wax that goes into the... We'll talk a little bit about that later. In the meantime, we're also going to be talking about some news, some huge news with Star Wars, and people are just going bonkers and insane over this news. And there's also the Trailer Park box office prediction DVD roundup. If you want to get a hold of me, you can reach me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can call me at 740-205-6456, or you can find me on the interwebs at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at twitter.com/KevinCarr. And I apologize. I have a bit of a raspy voice. I was sick earlier this week, and I've conquered and I've defeated the sickness to the point that I'm wearing my official Fat Guys at the Movies uniform, which is no shirt on in the magical studio in the sky. And all you have left is this raspy Demi Moore voice that maybe makes me sexier in your minds. I don't know. Well, here's somebody else who thinks he's sexy.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Thank you, Ron Burgundy. Let's just dive right in. Star Wars news. There's been so much Star Wars news this week that I actually had to put a filter on my Twitter account because there's a bunch of leaks and rumors. And you know, Star Wars has been insane. I mean, since the 70s and 80s, when they could actually withhold information. That's why they called Return of the Jedi Blue Harvest, was to hide the fact that it was a Star Wars movie when they're shooting it. But now with the internet and with the way reporting is, all this stuff's going up. They had a practical effect show up from the new Star Wars movies, and everyone's saying, oh, this is Return to Greatness, forgetting the fact that there was a ton of practical effects in the prequels as well that a lot of people didn't like. So I'm just going to have to back off from some of the social media simply because it's not spoiler-free already. And the movie's not even done casting because they've added people to the cast. Lupita Nyong'o got cast. We all knew this was coming. She's going to be in Star Wars 7. And that Tilda Swinton looking girl from Game of Thrones, she's also on there. Oh my God, on Game of Thrones. Now, not this week. The other thing that happened to that other character in that other, I don't watch. I'm sorry. I just wanted to sound cool. When I was talking about Game of Thrones. Anyways, back to Lupita Nyong'o. We knew she was going to be in this, and I'm okay. I hope that she kicks some butt in this movie, because I think she needs a meatier part than some of the stuff that has been coming out since she had been cast in, you know, like in Nonstop, which was fine, but she was just there in the background. I want to know if her brother got cast, because her brother was more excited to be at the Oscars than she was, which was pretty amazing. Other Star Wars news, Josh Trank, who directed the movie Chronicle, which I hated, and he's doing the new Fantastic Four movie. He has signed on to direct a standalone Star Wars film. Nobody knows exactly what it is yet. As long as it's not found footage, I think I'm going to be fine with it. In other non-Star Wars but Lucasfilm news, there's Robert Pattinson has been rumored to become the new Indiana Jones. I don't know if I'm wild about that idea. I guess if they're looking for a younger, he's better than Shia LaBeouf. And actually, I'm not anti-Robert Pattinson. I think he has been trying to break out of the Twilight mold for a couple years now, and Twilight's been keeping him down. I think he's trying to shed that and get rid of that really quickly. And if he doesn't, I just hope that he commits and does a good job with it and doesn't bring his constipated look of acting angst that he had in the Twilight movies. Now moving on to some superhero news, before we get to the other Disney property, which is Marvel, let's talk about Batman versus Superman. Emily Blunt has supposedly been cast as Catwoman, which I think's fine, but where are all these characters coming from? I really honestly think Batman versus Superman is going to turn into Iron Man 2. With all these back-ended stories and bringing all these characters and trying to give a background to everybody, it's just going to become a mess. And it's not like Zack Snyder's great at handling multi-characters like this. So we'll see what happens with that. In Marvel news now, we've got Josh Brolin going to be Thanos in Guardians of the Galaxy and in Avengers 2, which is now no big surprise when he is not playing Batman. So that kind of got revealed this week. Also, there's still craziness going on with the Ant-Man movie. Adam McKay was originally attached, then he wasn't. They've had a couple people kind of come in and out and rumored and hoped. The bottom line is, I think what's going to happen, this is my prediction, Ant-Man will be given to a hired gun, somebody along the lines of like Brett Ratner or Martin Campbell, and they're actually going to do a decent job for the mainstream, and it's just going to upset the fanboys like crazy, but it's going to do well, and it's going to do better than the Edgar Wright Ant-Man movie would have done, even if it's not as good of a movie, because it will be more mainstream. And then all the people are going to be enraged with Marvel and say, oh, well, DC knows what they're doing, until they remember that Ben Affleck is playing Batman. Other Marvel news, you've got Scott Derrickson, the director of Sinister, is going to be directing Doctor Strange, with apparently Jared Leto is the up and running for the cast. A couple remakes, you got Cliffhanger and Stargate, movies from the 90s that are going to be remade. In fact, Stargate's going to be remade by Roland Emmerich in a trilogy, which seems sort of pathetic at this point. To go back and remake your own movie in the same language, I know some people have remade their movie and done the English language version if it came from another country, but just to remake the movie and I mean, then you had this, you know, multiple TV shows based on this stuff. Stargate's, I think, been run into the ground. I what else new are we going to get to? I don't know if that's going to be any good. And then finally, Jupiter Ascending has been moved to February. And here's why it's a good thing. I think it would have been lost in July. It had a July release date. I think it would have been buried under all the other competition. So many dates have been shuffled around that they kind of encroached on what was originally kind of an open weekend. And now it's getting moved to February. And as long as the budget doesn't skyrocket with reshoots and new effects, I think it has a better chance of at least being an acceptable movie in February. The Wachowski movies have never been huge, huge, huge moneymakers outside of the Matrix films. And that was an anomaly. I think they do some very smart sci-fi and some very out there stuff, but you need to, but they're never going to be these $500 million movies. You're never going to get The Dark Knight out of them. You may get a fantastic movie, but you're never going to get one that's embraced by the public the way the first Matrix movie was even. All right, well, with that sound, we need to move into the trailer park. We're just gonna burn through these really quick. The first one is Begin Again, which opens on June 27th. It stars Keira Knightley and Mark Ruffalo.
This is unbelievable. You're a total rock star.
You're Dave Cole. Would you mind taking a photograph?
I don't know what to say.
I loved him like a fool.
You got some talent.
I want to make records with you.
I'm not a performer. I just write songs from time to time.
What do you write them for? Searching for
meaning. Let's record an album. And the city is our studio.
This is a romance kind of, it's not really a comedy, a romantic drama. And I'm not into music. I'm not a huge music guy. I never have been. And I get that. I'm not into this sort of thing. So this movie is supposedly directed by the guy who did Once. And I hated that film. And everyone thinks I'm an insane person for hating it, but I hated that movie. That's just the way I am. I'm not into music as a backdrop. I mean, it just doesn't get me. So this one just kind of looks, it looks like it's a higher production value of a movie like Once. The next one we're going to look at is called What If? And it opens on August 8th, starring Harry Potter himself, Daniel Radcliffe, and Zoe Kazan.
I just had sex. I'm about to eat nachos. It's the greatest moment of my life.
Did you guys meet?
Wallace, hi. This is my cousin Chantry.
I'm going to give you my number. We should hang out.
Yeah.
My boyfriend will be worried about what happened to me. So, friends?
Yeah, why not?
I really don't have much to say about this movie aside from the fact that it just looks like another weepy, angsty male version of a romantic comedy. But I will say this. I am seriously buying nachos for this weekend because I want to do what Adam Driver says in that. What? Yeah, I only have sex on the weekends. Why? Because I'm a grown-up with kids. Guys, that's how it works in the real world. Anyways, we need to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Obvious Child and the Sacrament.
It hurts.
Hi, it's Kevin Carr in my sexy voice talking to you. That does not sound sexy at all. I apologize, people. I thought I was going to come in like Barry White, and then just women were going to come showing up at the magical studio in the sky, break down the doors, and throw their panties at me. That's not going to happen at all. I think I have cleared out the magical studio in the sky from any female presence for the rest of my life with that. I don't know what that was. Oh my gosh. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys of the Movie coming at you, sounding like the creepiest creature on the radio, trying to be sexy. Demi Moore, your vocal cords have forsaken me. I apologize. Let's move on to movie reviews. Let's get out of this embarrassment quickly. Let's talk about Obvious Child. And this one stars Jenny Slate as a young stand-up comedian who must deal with real-life pressures of losing her day job, finding a boyfriend, and facing an unwanted pregnancy.
Oh, my boobs hurt really bad.
Maybe you're pregnant.
Oh, my God.
Maybe you want to tell him.
Why? You don't owe him anything. You don't even know this guy. Maybe he just deserves to know that, like, I'm not a psycho. This happened, and I'm going to get an abortion.
Hey, Max. Remember from before when we did sex to each other? I'm having your abortion. Do you want to share a dessert? Leave with that. Definitely leave with that. Perfect.
Before I start actually talking about the movie itself, this is one of those movies. It hasn't been, you know, just coming out in limited release this week. It's going to be rolling out throughout June around the country. The closer this movie gets to Water, this is a line I stole from John Waters. The closer you get to a large body of water, whether you're on the coast or whether you're a giant river, you know, if you're a big city that has a thriving art scene, it's going to do well there. And in the red states, in the Midwest, in the flyover country, it's not going to do well. And the reason being is not what really the movie's about. The reason being is going to be the abortion issue. This is a movie about a woman who gets pregnant and she decides to have an abortion. It is not here to debate abortion, and that's the difference. I think making a movie to debate abortion is kind of a fruitless effort because you're not going to change anybody's mind. Whether you are pro-life or pro-choice, all a movie that is trying to change your mind about abortion is going to be preaching to the choir, no matter which choir you're talking to. Very much like a lot of the faith-based movies that come out, they play completely to an audience, but, you know, Son of God, when it came out in the theaters, that wasn't going to convert anybody into Christianity. It just wasn't. It was made for the faithful. And an Obvious Child, I think, is going to get pigeonholed as the abortion movie. And that's really not what it's about. I mean, it is. It is about the struggle and the decision she makes. The point is that the character makes the decision and then it's about her journey. It's not about whether or not abortion's right or wrong or should be taken lightly or shouldn't be taken lightly. It doesn't really even take a stand on that. It operates as saying, well, this is something that's legal in this society, in this state, and this is what it does, and this is what happens. And it's how she deals with all these pressures going around her. And that's I think, where it triumphs, because it's a difficult film to make in order to do that. It's a difficult film to make her decide, make that decision, but not become a zealot about it, and not to do it without any sort of remorse. I mean, there's a lot of humanity in what goes on there, whether or not you agree with that decision. And I'm not even getting into that issue. I think it's a well-made movie. I think Jenny Slate does a fantastic job. She's had a kind of a rough time on screen over the years. I mean, she was in movies like the last Chipmunks movie. She played on Parks and Rec as the sister, the crazy sister to the greatest character ever lived, Jean Ralphio Saperstein. And she was famous before being on Saturday Night Live for dropping the F-bomb on Saturday Night Live TV, which is, I don't think she meant to. I think it was whoops. So the movie is, it's very much lives in a world of girls being not the people, but the TV show on HBO. It's that kind of a movie about 20-somethings trying to get their crap together and live their life and maybe not doing it quite the way they need to, and dealing with life in the modern world where you do have to rely on your parents and you can't just make a living and you can't just get a job with whatever it comes along. You have to deal with a lot of problems and then chasing a dream of stand-up comedy and then throwing in the whole mix of what it's like to be dating in the big city. It's a well-made movie. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. It's not my kind of movie. It's about issues that I'm not facing whatsoever. But overall, I thought it was well-made and it didn't put me to sleep or anything like that. So in that respect, I'm going to say that it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, the next movie we're going to be talking about is The Sacrament, in which horror director Ty West tells a chilling story of a cult that gets out of hand based on infamous true events.
Here we are. Welcome to Eden Parish.
You guys built all this?
Father had a vision, and we built heaven here on Earth.
Who is Father?
He's the guy that started all of this.
Aren't those the guides? What are they doing with guns?
You don't know what's really going on here. This place is not what it seems.
These people want to leave. They have their suitcases packed. I have no idea what to do.
Sam, do not get involved in this!
Please take my daughter.
We can't let him go back to New York. Oh, this is the last sacrament.
It's so hard to talk about The Sacrament without talking about what inspires it. But if you watch the movie, within 15, 20 minutes, you're going to know what true story this is referencing. If you know anything about the history of cults in not just America, but the world, I'm reticent to drop the name of what it's about, even though if anyone watches, they're going to figure it out. And if you don't figure it out, then you're going to be ignorant of what that cult did and what the repercussions were. But still, it's one of the rare found footage movies that actually works. And I give that completely give props to Ty West about that because it doesn't use it as a gimmick. It uses it as a framing device. And it's about this group of people that are trying to get their one of their sisters out of this cult that's out of the country. And they go in there with cameras and they're doing it as a documentary thing. And these are journalists who are used to being embedded in pretty hairy situations. There's a reason for the cameras to be there. And there's a reason that they're going to want to keep documenting this. This isn't just some guy who has a camera at a party and says, oh, there's a monster attack in New York. I'm going to hold on this camera no matter what. There's at least a reason for it. And there's a reason they want to capture all this and take this footage and get it out of this cult area. If you watch the trailers, you might get the sense that it's an anti-religious thing. It's not. It is not anti-religion. It is not anti-Christian. It is anti-cult. And if you've done any sort of investigation or even just spending some time surfing Wikipedia about cults going all the way back in the 50s and 60s, even these are some pretty terrifying things. And we've seen this stuff show up in movies before, like Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, or The Sound of My Voice. These are movies that have dabbled in what cults were and that cults still exist and how you can have this charismatic leader can just get these people riled up and rally around him and can do some pretty horrible things. And while this takes it as far as it can go, it's kind of true. And it's based on a true story. And the horrible things that you see in this movie are things that have happened. Maybe not exactly as you see, but they do happen. That's where the true horror is. And that's where Ty West revels in the true horror. He's never somebody, he's not like Eli Roth, even though Eli Roth produces. Eli Roth is like, let's just get the most grisly, gritty, horrible thing that can happen. True life horror. Ty West has dealt with ghosts and killer viruses and devil worshipers. So he's dealt with all these other things. And this is just a new angle for him. And I think it's a fantastic movie because of that. So The Sacrament, while it's uncomfortable to watch at times, totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it. When we come back, it is time to talk about more death with Edge of Tomorrow and The Fault in Our Stars. Kevin Carr coming back at you with Fat Guys at the Movies. We are rolling into more movie reviews to the big ones. It's going to be the big fight in the box office, death versus death. You've got Edge of Tomorrow versus Cancer, the movie, also known as The Fault in Our Stars. But first, let's talk about Edge of Tomorrow. And in this film, Tom Cruise plays a soldier who is killed in an alien invasion, only to discover that he has the ability to relive the day over again and change the time stream.
The invasion will fail.
I die within 5 minutes of landing on that beach, along with every other soldier.
How did you do that?
Come on!
Come find me when you wake up!
You do know what's happening to me.
What happened to you happened to me. You hijacked their power.
How do I control it?
You have to die. Every day.
Over the past several years, Tom Cruise has kind of blown hot and cold for me. I don't necessarily come in immediately and say, hey, it's a Tom Cruise movie, it's going to be good. Because he's done some stinkers. I mean, he was in Rock of Ages, which was just plain embarrassing. He was in Jack Reacher, which was okay, but he was horribly miscast in that. But then he did other movies that were really, really, really good, like Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, Mission Impossible 4. I actually thought Oblivion was okay. Actually, the biggest problem with Oblivion was when Tom Cruise was Tom Cruise. If he was just going to play a character, that would have been fine, but he just sort of did his Tom Cruise thing a little too much in that movie. He does the Tom Cruise thing kind of all over Edge of Tomorrow, but it works, and it's a fast-moving enough film that has enough going on, and it works for the character he plays, that Edge of Tomorrow really sells it as a movie with him in it. And my biggest worry of Edge of Tomorrow is that it's going to be kind of beyond some people, because it deals with time loops and alien creatures and a whole bunch of just sort of mind-bending things that are sort of second nature to sci-fi fans like myself. But to a person who's not used to this, it can really set their brain on edge. And I'm afraid that people are just not going to know what the movie's about, even when they're told exactly what the movie's about. It also stars Emily Blunt. She plays another soldier in this war. She does a fantastic job. I have to say, I was surprised at how much I liked it. I was cautiously optimistic going in because, like I said, Tom Cruise has a tendency to ruin the movies by just being himself, kind of being that arrogant character that he is in real life. But it works in this one. And it's got some great action. It's got some killer concepts. It gets a little dumber near the end of the movie. The third act isn't nearly as smart as the rest of the film, but that's okay. I mean, it works. It's a fulfilling third act, so it doesn't actually seem out of place. And it has some fantastic special effects. We've got another point really with special effects that you can do a lot that seems almost seamless at times, depending on what you're doing. I mean, there are still certain things that if you use special effects, it's painfully obvious if they're digital. I'm talking about blood. CGI blood almost always looks bad. But in this film, the effects look fantastic. And as a sci-fi epic, it's smart. It has a lot going on. It does throw a lot of things at you. And it can be a little bit hard to wrap your brain around. But that shouldn't be a deterrent. That should be something that you should go in with a challenge and enjoy, because it gets you thinking and it makes you not just think about sort of like the very basic elements of politics and manifest destiny that are tossed around these ideas in this movie, but also just sort of the concept of time and our relationship in there. It doesn't violate its laws or anything like that. So I really have to say, Edge of Tomorrow is really a fantastic movie. Sadly, it's probably not going to reach as big of an audience, partly because Tom Cruise is not nearly the box office juggernaut that he used to be. And this is a bit of a hard sell to the audience. But ultimately, Edge of Tomorrow totally rocks. Go check that one out.
It rocks.
Excellent! Yay!
The next movie I want to talk about is The Fault in Our Stars. A teenage girl with cancer who has closed herself off to relationships falls in love with a boy who is in remission.
So, what's your story?
I was diagnosed when I was 13.
Oh, no. Your real story.
I am quite unextraordinary.
I reject that out of hand.
You know, Gus talks about you all the time.
We're just friends.
I hope you realize you're trying to keep your distance from me in no way lessens my affection for you.
Gus, I'm a grenade. One day I'm gonna blow up. And I'm gonna obliterate everything in my wake. I don't want to hurt you.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, and we're getting ready to review this. This movie, there are some good things in this movie. Shailene Woodley kind of redeems her crappy acting from Divergent in this film to a degree. It is a button pusher and it's a tearjerker. It's very deliberate and you know exactly what you're going to get into. It's shamelessly manipulative at times. And that's where the cynic in me rolled my eyes, where I couldn't get too swept up in the emotion. I mean, there's going to be things, everybody, the thing is, reality is everybody in this world most likely knows somebody who died of cancer or especially somebody close to them having died of cancer. It's a disease that touches almost everybody in the world, I would imagine. And even the youngest kids, you know, even my 6-year-old has known people who have died of cancer. So it's a kind of this universal group of diseases. So we can all relate. So even if the movie's crap, which it is, you can watch it and remember what it was like when this person passed away or this person was going through chemotherapy or radiation and the struggles and the problems that they had. Even if you well up in this movie, you can still realize that it's kind of terrible. You know, with the greatest sympathy and respect for anybody who's dealing with cancer, either personally or a loved one or a family member or a friend, I don't mean this to be offensive, but watching The Fault in Our Stars is kind of like watching a loved one die of cancer. Because cancer, it's different than like a car accident, which is very sudden and you usually find out after the fact, or it's not like a heroic death or something meaningful like which can be just as devastating, but you know, if it's in law enforcement or in the military, you know, in the line of duty, there's a certain amount of honor to that. Cancer oftentimes robs people of their dignity and their physical control and their body image and just their consciousness, and just it takes a while. Even a fast moving cancer will take days to move through the system to completely send somebody out of this realm. And that's what this movie's like. It just keeps going on, and it's like, I remember when my grandfather died of cancer. Every day we're getting, oh, this might be it. You better come to the hospital. You come to the hospital and he struggles through it. He makes it through another day and you go home and you come back to the hospice the next day. And it's just this almost seemingly never ending coming in and seeing the person worse than they were the day before, but not yet dead. And that's what this movie is. And then finally, when you get to the end, you're like, I can finally put this behind me, even though it drew itself out. I mean, this movie goes on forever. I mean, it has more endings than Return of the King, and it's shorter. And the other problem with it is that the whole love story I found completely ringing false, because, I mean, even though Shailene Woodley does a fine job acting, she's a little bit stereotypical, surly teenage girl, but I'll give her this. The character has more of a right to be surly and depressing and angsty than like Bella in the Twilight movies. Because in the Twilight movie, she's like, I don't have a boyfriend. And in this one, the girl's like, I've had cancer since I was 13. So at least she earns that. The character earns that. But the guy who plays the love interest is horrible. He's boring. He's not very engaging. The character is incredibly weak and two-dimensional. There's not a lot of depth there. He exists as this almost pornographic fantasy to be the love for this girl at presumably the end of her life when she's a teenager. So it's just poorly constructed with just teeth-grindingly bad dialogue at times and really heavy-handed imagery and metaphors that don't work and cliches and I guess everything that was going to happen in this movie. It's just, it's not a good movie. Don't let the reviews change your mind. It is a bad movie. Oh, if you read the book and you weeped the whole time, you're probably going to love it. But if you're a cynical SOB like me, you're not going to like it. And I say that The Fault in Our Stars sucks.
It sucks.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about Anna and Burt's Buzz, box office, and the DVD roundup. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We have more movies to talk about. There's two more in the hopper, so let's jump right into those. The first one is Anna. A remote viewer tries to get to the bottom of a criminal case involving a secluded and possibly sociopathic teenager.
Her name is Anna. I don't think a doctor can help. Maybe a viewer can.
Depression, bipolar disorder, deep-seated narcissism. Lots of problems.
She tried to kill three girls in school. Has Anna's family hired you to find out if she has a soul?
Can I have a seat?
Do you mind? So you didn't poison those girls?
I'm not a sociopath. Just smart enough to think like one.
This is one of those smaller movies that gets released generally on demand and in limited release. It's opening in some theaters this week. It stars Mark Strong as the remote viewer. And if you're not familiar with remote viewing, he really doesn't do remote viewing in this. Remote viewing was supposedly you psychically go somewhere. And that was a big thing in the 90s until Art Bell talked to this guy about it and they remote Comet Hale-Bopp. And then speaking of cults, there's the Heaven's Gate cult then killed themselves wearing Nikes and all that, you know, castration and all that good stuff, all the fun stuff that comes along with being in a cult, people. This has nothing to do with Heaven's Gate or Nikes or castration or Kool-Aid. This has to do with this crazy girl trying to figure out whether she was framed for this event that happened in her past or whether she really did it. And you know, she's nuts anyways. The poster and the trailers all hint to the fact that there's something more going on here. And Mark Strong, his character is sort of the patsy through the whole thing. The movie itself is decently well done. It's directed by the guy who did Nonstop and Orphan. I liked Nonstop. I thought Orphan was pretty bad. It does have some focus problems, not in terms of keeping the picture in focus, but keeping the story in focus. There are times when I'm still not sure exactly what was happening. It deals a bit in dream logic, which works in a completely nutso film like Suspiria or Phantasm. Doesn't quite work here, where you're sort of trying to tell a real-life crime thriller with a fantastical element to it. There's some decent stuff to it, but overall, it really doesn't have the punch that it needs to have, and it also is extremely predictable. There are a couple things that kind of took me by surprise, but they're more incidental than the actual story and the plot itself. So I'm going to say Anna kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Okay. The next movie I want to talk about is Burt's Buzz. And in this movie, the face behind Burt's Bees is profiled in this intimate and witty documentary.
I had no desire to be a upward mobile rising yuppie with a trophy wife, a trophy house, a trophy car. It wasn't as if I'd summoned these bees down or gone looking for them. It was an act of God. I mean, it was a no-brainer.
Burt was never trying to build a billion-dollar company, ever.
I don't know whether he wanted to exit the company or he was pushed.
No one's ever owned me. No one's ever going to own me.
What's funny is when I got a copy of Burt's Buzz to watch, I said to my wife, I said, hey, I got to watch Burt's Buzz. It's about the guy who does Burt's Bees. Do you want to watch it with me? And she literally grabs a tube of Burt's Bees lip balm and starts putting it on her lips and she's like, yeah, I'll watch it. I'm like, what are you a walking advertisement for this film? And she's like, oh no, you said that. And I remembered I needed to put this on my lips. So that shows how pervasive the product is in our society and in the global society. It's not a lickety-split, fast-action film, and it's really not one that I think is going to live long and people are going to remember forever as being this fantastic piece of filmmaking, but it's a perfectly charming film. It's a wonderfully sweet documentary that shows the behind-the-scenes of this guy who's really kind of a wackadoodle hermit. He would be considered this crazy hippie. I mean, he still is. Granola-chewing, vegetarian type. It shows that he's a bit of a curmudgeon. He's a total loner. He lives in a house with his dogs, and he doesn't have hot water. He heats his water on a wood stove. He lives extremely modestly. And it also tells a story about where Burt's Bees came from, where the product came from, how it grew, and what ended up actually happening to it, which sort of pulls the rug out from under him in a certain ways. It's very tragic. It's heartbreaking at times, but you know it's giving only part of the story because you know it's all told from his point of view. I'm sure in any falling out that happened with his business partner, you know there's always a second story or multiple sides to the story. It does show him in sort of a sad light, but it also shows him at a time in a trap of his own design, but he's perfectly happy to be in that trap. And that's okay. It's a very charming documentary. It's very warm. It's interesting. It's a nice diversion. It's the only movie out right now, this new this week, that does not deal with death or dying of some sort. Yeah, if you want to see something that's not terribly depressing or angsty, this might be the way to go. So yeah, Burt's Buzz, I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, you're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the box office. Last week, I said that Maleficent was going to win. I was right, but I did undercut my estimate quite a bit. I had said that it was going to make $55 million. It, in fact, made almost $70 million. It made $69 million. It was way above expectations, much closer to Oz the Great and Powerful than was originally thought. I mean, it's just trailing Oz the Great and Powerful a little bit. And that's a very relevant one to compare it to, even though the release dates are different, but because it has the same demographic, it has the same structure in terms of Disney playing in a previous film, even though they don't own The Wizard of Oz, and it was IMAX 3D release. So you got a lot of these factors are very similar. It was just last year. So there's really not a real inflation bump to deal with. So you really get a one-to-one comparison on this. And I think that's great. And Maleficent did well. That's wonderful. I you know, more power to him. I think that that was a perfectly fine story. It wasn't as good as it could have been, but that's okay. A Million Ways to Die in the West kind of bombed with about $17 million. It actually came in making about half of what X-Men Days of Future Past did in its second weekend, which is a big drop off, a 64% drop off, but you expect that with a weekend like that. It's still going to be the top grossing X-Men movie of worldwide. It's going to miss the Last Stand domestic number, but that's okay. I think there's enough going on. There's enough goodwill for X-Men to make it work. And then, of course, Godzilla's dropping like a stone. It's still seeing 60% drops each time. And that's, I think, because it doesn't have a rewatch value. No one wants to go and not see the lizard more than they already haven't seen him. So that's what I think. And everything else just kind of falls right into place with that. The movie I think is going to win this weekend. I'm actually going to go out on a limb and say that The Fault in Our Stars is going to win. And it's going to be like $30 to $35 million. And I'm saying that because that's the kind of world we live in. I'd love to see Edge of Tomorrow win. It's not going to happen. And I think it's not going to happen because Edge of Tomorrow is a little bit too smart, I think, in some ways for the general audience. And I also think it's a little bit too hard science fiction. Time traveled, mind-bending, time-bending stories are sometimes hard for everybody to understand. Remember how people were going, I can't understand Inception, and people were freaking out about that? That's the crowd you're trying to woo to go see Edge of Tomorrow. And that's why they can say, hey, we're going to go see Cancer, the movie, written by Nicholas Sparks Jr. And that's what you're going to end up with. And I think that's going to, all the indicators are saying that Fault of Our Stars is going to win. The only reason that I think those might be wrong is because it has a very narrow marketplace of that teenage crowd. And those are the people that buy tickets online. The people who are going to go see Edge of Tomorrow are going to walk in the box office. They're not necessarily going to buy their tickets online. Not as many. I mean, there's going to be plenty that do. That sound means it's time for the world-famous DVD Roundup. We're not going to have a spotlight this week because we just had too many movies to review. So let's just jump right into the DVDs. The first one, the big one this week, is Lone Survivor, of course starring Mark Wahlberg, as him and a group of other Navy SEALs are pinned down in Afghanistan, based on a true story. Heartbreaking story, rough movie to watch. Very good if you're into military films. Very realistic. I actually mentioned it the other week when I talked about the Hornet's Nest, with how realistic that real footage was compared to the footage I saw in Lone Survivor. RoboCop is also out. That is the remake. Not terribly good. It has the problems I didn't like. It took out all the satire and put in a bunch of cliche cop references. It's just a weak movie. It's not as strong as it could have been. It's not a total waste, but, you know, it's like Total Recall. When they remade that, you're just like, nah. That's my review of it. Nah. I don't know how do I spell that. Maybe I'll just say it into, like, Siri. Siri, will you look up nah and see what she says? I'll get back to you on that. There's also In the Blood, starring Gina Carano, as a woman who goes on the warpath when her husband is kidnapped during their honeymoon. The Motel Life, which is kind of a mopey, dreary movie with Stephen Dorff. True Blood Season 6 is out. The Man with No Name trilogy is remastered, now on Blu-ray. The Birdcage, La Caja Falls, done in American with Robin Williams and Nathan Lane and Gene Hackman and Diane Wiest. And then the stinker of the week I'm putting is Son of God, because it's not that good of a movie. The story's great. I have a lot of respect for the story, but it's not executed well at all. It's, I mean, no pun intended. But ultimately, you've had, this is your fourth chance to see this movie. You had it on TV, then you had the miniseries put on DVD, then you had this movie come out. Now you see, if you haven't seen it yet, how do you not know? So anyways, that's the stinker of the week. Next week, we're going to be talking about 22 Jump Street, How to Train Your Dragon, Dose, Lullaby, and Words and Pictures. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.